Seattle gets the 32nd franchise in the National Hockey League. It cost them a measly $650 million.
Yeah. Who broke the news? Because it was so newsy. No one knew it.
Oh, yeah. Nobody knew this
was
coming.
Did anyone break it?
No.
Or did it
just... I'm sure 100 hockey pucks tried to claim it.
Yeah.
But I didn't pay any attention. Yeah.
We didn't know. Yeah. We didn't know it was going to happen.
You got any opinion on the Seattle market? I don't know if you have any history there at all. I can't imagine
you do. Have you watched games in Florida?
Yeah.
Like, what are they all dressed up as, red seats? Come on. Forget good seats available. Good sections available.
Well, what about Seattle? Is Seattle going to have trouble?
Work. No, I think it'll work. I think they've got strong ownership. They've got strong market. They've been looking at this thing for about two decades. They are... They're looking to rebuild that rink to make it state of the art. It's going to cost them $800 million for the rink. Oh my gosh, that's incredible. I just think it perfectly places them in a market where you can divide up the league and you can have all the different divisions all evenly spaced. You know, Gary will make the point that you can take, you know, Arizona, put them in the Central. That's where they belong, because you know that the part of the problem is that people weren't going to games because of that.
I don't think so.
Next trick. Yeah, next trick. But to me, it's they have some strong people involved, whether it's Tom Lewicki. Like, those guys are, they're stars in what they do. They don't fail. And so I like it. And, you know, I'm a player. So it's 23 more jobs. And it's 23 more jobs in the minors. It's, you know, I shouldn't talk that selfishly, but I'm a player, and I'm like looking at it now saying, when I broke in the league with 16 teams and 400 players, now we're looking at last year 900 players played in the league. That's 900 families getting an income, and now we're starting to close in on north of 950, 960, 970. Like, this to me is not bad news. And if the club doesn't make money, that's up to the ownership group that decided that this was the right place to be. But to me, it makes imminent sense with that market, where it is, size of the market. It's been a long time coming, and the people that are buying this team, people that are involved in this team, are not stupid people. They are way smarter than I am, so I'm not going to second guess them.
How do you think, I know people love talking about labor, but if from the union's point of view here, the Players Association, you know, they have the potential reopener coming up. They've pushed the start date of this team beyond that, so it's not, in theory, it's not going to collide, which would have potentially given the players some leverage. But how do you, the players do not share in the $650 million under the terms of the collective agreement, but as you say, there are more jobs. And there will be more revenue, which in theory will push the salary cap up.
Hashtag mistake.
But how do they, strategically, how do you look at this if you're Don Fehr in terms of the reopener?
I don't think it matters. I mean, one of the things I did when I went to Player Association, whatever, 7, 8, 6, whatever 2000 it was, you know, we did a whole evaluation of the ownership group and said, what are these guys worth? And because, you know, I was there in 94. I was part of the lockout in 94. And, you know, we looked at what the group was worth then. They were all millionaires. Oh, okay. Some of them weren't. They were hundredaires. But some of them, you know, had some significant resource. Some of them, the team was exactly what they were. That's it. It was defined by, we own the team and that's what makes me money. And, you know, 92, our entire payroll with the Islanders was like $3.8 million. The entire payroll. Not one player. Not a signing bonus. The whole team was $3.8 million. Okay, life changed. 94 changed. The Constitution changed with Gary. Instead of having seven guys want to play, all he needed in 2004 was to have seven guys not want to play. And then the ownership group changed in a huge way. They weren't millionaires anymore. They were billionaires. They were the people that went to Ty Domi's wedding. I was the only millionaire at Ty Domi's wedding. The rest were billionaires. Okay, and so you got to look at that group and say, like, what does this club really mean to my asset? And for a lot of them, it's a yacht, it's a toy. For us, it would be a Sea-Doo in the backyard. Like, it's not that valuable for these guys. So the collectively bargained group of this, whether we're going to have an agreement, an extension, or not have an extension, I don't think it matters, because, you know, when you look back to the days of some of these guys buying teams when they were out front in Boston selling popcorn, and then all of a sudden, you know, own the team, and then this team became something where they own the, you know, the food rights to every group in the NHL, and wow, what a success story. These guys are already success stories. So I don't look at it and say, you know, it whether we have an agreement or not, it defines whether we had this team or not at this particular time. You know, they'll have a team. They'll have an agreement. The players will come back and play. Lockout, no lockout. I don't know what's going to happen. I'm not in the trenches. But the bottom line is this guy wants to own a team, wants to have an NHL franchise, wants to win a Stanley Cup, something he can't do with any other business that he has. It is a small piece of what his kind of structure of his financial element is, and it probably is not even a thought factor for him. I mean, the biggest thing he's probably concerned about is his rink's probably not going to be ready in the first month. Okay, so we're going to be the first month on the road of an expansion team. And, okay, it'll get ready. It'll get ready in November, but it's not going to be ready in October. And so I don't think he looks at it that way. I don't think that is great drama. That's great. But for the rest of the owners, I don't think they could give a rat's ass. It's going to get done when it gets done.
You really answered this question, but I want to specifically ask you if you think that the impact on Arizona of moving divisions is going to means anything in Glendale, anything at all.
No, it is not, it's not a Arizona problem and having the team there. It's where the team is.
Well, that's why I said Glendale specifically.
The team. Once you move it, like I was there when the rink was full and thought, wow, it's so good to come out here. We stayed at the Phoenician. It was like it's the only hotel I ever stayed in where you could put in, and I'm dating myself, but like an iPod into the and listen to music in the room. I'm like, wow, this is like state of the art.
Yeah,
am I going to the moon soon? This is amazing. And, you know, then they moved the team, and it's like, okay, get in your car. You're going to drive the space shuttle at 800 miles an hour. It's going to take an hour. You're going to get to a rink that's in the middle of nowhere. It's great if you're the whatever the football team is, and you only have to come there three times a year, but it's different when you got to come twice in a week. It made perfect sense when they had the two owners, and one had the rink, and one had the businesses around it, and, you know, yada, yada, yada. But it doesn't make any sense now. It's not a Phoenix problem. It's where the rink is. Move the team. If they could do that, move it downtown or move it to Scottsdale, then they're back in business.
But that, there's no...
It's not a central time issue. My gosh, you think people are turning the games off because they start at 8 instead of 7? Stop it.
Central division work great if they're when they're in Houston. Natural rivalries. It's all lined up.
What if they move Arizona to Houston?
Yeah, it's perfect.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's an inevitability. There's no plan, motivation, acceleration towards a new arena anywhere else in Arizona, whether it's in Phoenix or Tucson or Scottsdale or anywhere else. There's no leverage there. There's no plan there. Nobody wants to build another arena. The team can't afford to build it on their own, and neither would they. Ultimately, the only answer is the answer we thought was going to happen 5 years ago, is move it.
I'll go back 10 years ago.
All right, maybe
and
10.
If the definition of financial failure was not Phoenix, then please define me what is, because they were bleeding out of every orifice. And they weren't making any money. And they have tried many, many things. And I'll give Gary full credit. He is not one for making decisions quickly. He hangs in there to the bitter end.
And I respect him for that. But
he has been hanging in there with that organization. It's his call. It's his call. And I would say the Players Association, probably in the last negotiations, you should have had a say as to where some of these franchises go. Because when the club loses 30, 40, 50 million, that would be defined as escrow. And so that's not, they don't like escrow. Well, you probably shouldn't like where some of these teams are.
Well,
and when you see all the red seats in Florida and you see all the empty seats in Phoenix and you start to see some of the stuff that goes around the league, and it's not like Toronto where Monday night you couldn't get another seat in, that was a chance for them when they got to the table, and they didn't, whether it's that or the Olympics or any of the other stuff, and you say to yourself, well, had your chance, didn't have a chance, but, you know, now it's up to the league. They decide where it goes. If it goes to Houston, if it stays in Phoenix, it's all on their shoulders.
We have very little time left, but you know the thing. I must say that the thing that I
nothing about Nylander. What? This is crazy.
It's over. It's done.
Done. It's over. Yesterday's newspaper. We spent 4 months talking about Nylander.
Right.
Enough already.
Most tradable contract ever of contract.
Yeah, but like, but the general manager says he ain't dealing him.
Oh, good one. Yeah.
He doesn't anticipate dealing him. Isn't that what he said?
Like, think about this.
One of those.
Something
he gets
like that.
$17 million before July 1, and then he's got a high cap value. He's making very little money when it comes to what's in your back pocket. So these teams like Phoenix and Carolina and Florida, this is like the perfect contract to trade for. Most of the money's paid before you get to July 1.
Right.
He's got a high cap value, so that's great. We get to the floor,
yeah.
And he doesn't make much money, and he scores 20 goals a year.
Yep.
And he's good looking. Anything else?
Well, no, and he can play with Matthews, who is going to be a free agent at the end of this year, I presume. And I've already bet that Arizona's going to make an offer.
Yeah, get in line. Carolina's next. So, I mean, that, when I saw the contract come out, I thought to myself, okay, bye-bye. So you got a short period of time.
I did too, but I mean, you know, we will take Dubas at his word, so at least for now.
Okay, call me in a year and we'll talk about it.
Yeah, well, we'll call you quicker than a year, probably next week. See you then. Goodbye.
All right. All right, cheers, pal.
Glenn Healy, the executive director of the NHL Alumni Association.